So, friends, what I intend to do today is to take you on a tour to different philosophical schools in India as to how they have conceived of their epistemological tools, the limbs of epistemology, how they have done. So I would show first part of my lecture as to how the veridical perception takes place. I'll confine my lecture to the perception alone, and I will show how the veridical, the right type of perception takes place, and why and how the erroneous perception takes place. So the first I will deal with the mechanism of perception, how perception exactly takes place in person. In perception, irrespective of it is whether it is veridical or illusory, erroneous, whether it is a cognition of pratibhasika, illusory objects, or empirical objects, or transcendental objects, what is necessary is there must be an object. The objectless cognition is not possible. Now, the consciousness, which we have seen in our last class as the basis of all the perceptions, it is something which is swaprakasa. It is self-luminous, and it is through this everything is known. It can be compared to a lamp, and if we try to prove its existence again, it ends only in infinite regress. If you want to bring one lamp to show another lamp, then you have to bring one more lamp to show that lamp, and then it will go on. So what happens is that we know that it is self-luminous, and it reveals itself as well as other objects, like a lamp. So now the very first limb of any perception is the sense organ. First, let us see the nature of sense organ. What is the sense organ according to Indian philosophical schools? There are three views as far as sense organ is concerned. Buddhists say, the Buddhist schools say, the indriya, that is sense organ, is called as indriya. It is the external orb, the orifice, like the golaka, you know, the whatever is available. This is the sense of hearing. And Mimamsakas say that indriya means a peculiar power connected with this orb. The potency, that is indriya shakti, that which is inherent in the orb. Now, the question is, in spite of the orb being intact, a person may not be able to perceive through that organ, as in the case of blind and deaf persons. They have nice eyes, maybe the eyes are beautiful, but the man is not able to see anything because the sense is not there. The outside sense organ is visible, but there is no power in that. So there is further a view that indriya is a subtle substance, a sukshma drabhya. There are three views. One view, the Buddhist views, that it is only the outside orb, whatever is visible to us, is the place. This one. See, a man's ear might be intact, but still he might not be hearing. See, the ear, physical ear. The physical ear is different from indriya. That is the question. Buddhists say that the physical ear itself is indriya. That is not right. And Mimamsakas say that it is a power, that which is inherent in the orb or the physical organ. And there is a third view, that it is a subtle substance which is located in the sense orb. It is not even a power. See, it is not a power according to Advaitins. Not only Advaitins, quite a few schools. We perceive through this sense organ because it is a subtle substance, sukshma drabhya. So Advaita accepts this view. The implication in saying that indriya is subtle is that it cannot be seen. See, you cannot see thing. You can see things through indriya, but you cannot see indriya. Indriya is atindriya. That is what we always say. Indriya itself is atindriya. It cannot be perceived, and it can be known only through inference. The question may arise as to why indriya should be a subtle material substance. Now we have five material elements, that like air, ether, fire, water and earth, which are known as panchabhutas. And these five elements are supposed to have originated from those bhutas, and they are the subtle material substances, the indriyas. The special quality of ether, special quality means the asadharana dharma. There is sadharana dharma for an object, and there is an asadharana dharma for an object, for a substance. And the special quality of ether is spoken to be the sound. And like the earth, touch, color, taste and smell are respective qualities of other bhutas. Their common qualities are two. One is insentience. They are jada. All bhutas are jada padarthas. And karyatva. They are effects. Being born out of the bhutas, what happens, since the indriyas are born out of the panchabhutas, they restrict themselves to their asadharana dharmas. In the sense that the auditory sense can function only in the field of sound. See, there is a pramana vyavastha. This is what is called as, by a particular sense organ, you can see the particular object through which or from out of which it has come. By sense of hearing, you can see the color. You cannot listen music, sorry. Sense of perception, that is, from visual sense, you can perceive color. You cannot listen music. From sense of hearing, you cannot see the object. The color you cannot see. So, each pramana has its own sphere of function. This is known as pramana vyavastha in Indian philosophy. Any pramana has to admit its limitation. None can know everything by the help of a particular indriya. Every indriya, therefore, is called as prapyakari. That means the indriya does its work by reaching out to the object. Like visual sense gives the knowledge of the color, form, etc. by reaching the object. And the similar is the case with the sense of hearing. It reaches the music and then perceives it. If the indriya need not establish the contact with the object given, then perception of even objects which are no more becomes logically possible. You see, if indriya does not work in its own sphere, then you are here and I see you, my sense of sight goes and reaches you and I see you. If that is not the case, then what would happen? Even those things which are not here would be visible to me. That is not the case. Considering the auditory case, we are able or capable of perceiving the direction, the distance and everything, the quality. Suppose there is a music, you can say who is singing that or who is playing that and what type of instrument it is, all that, where it is being played, all that you can say, because the sense organ reaches out that place. There are two views in Indian philosophy. One view is the object comes to the sense organ. Another view is the sense organ goes to the object. So by and large, the second view is more accepted in the schools, that the sense organ goes to the object, because the other view is being refuted in the sense that there are so many things that are adjudicated or known from out of the fact that the sense goes to the object. Okay, therefore, so in Advaita believes that indriya is the subtle material substance which is called as prapyakari, which perceives its object by reaching the place. Now, the second most important limb of perception is mind. So this all I talked is about the sense organs. We have discussed the sense organs are material and what are the qualities. They are born out of the panchabhutas, and they reach their objects to perceive those objects. The second is the mind and antahkarana, which is also a very prominent limb or prominent, it has a prominent place in perception. There are three distinct views in Indian philosophy as far as the question of the mind or antahkarana is concerned. The Nyaya Vaisheshika school says that mind is a drabhya. Drabhya is, it is a substance, okay, which is a material in nature. The Samkhya school is of the view that it is a real entity at par with Purusha. It is a Purusha category because you know that Manas came out of the Prakriti. But it has a very distinct place in Samkhya philosophy and it is real, real as much real as the Purusha is. It is an evolute of Prakriti and hence like Prakriti, it is also real. For Advaita, he accepts both and rejects both. It is material, but it is not real. It is not an independent entity. Advaita says that mind is not an independent entity. The only entity that exists independently is, you know, self, the Brahman. The entire world is a product of Maya, which does not enjoy any independent reality. It depends upon Brahman for its existence. In keeping with Maya, the effects of Maya are also not real. They are not independently real. Maya is material and in Advaita, Maya is taken as the source of mind. Maya is almost like Prakriti, not exactly like Prakriti. Because Maya is something which is going to be sublated. Maya is something which is not there. Prakriti, you see, Samkhya Prakriti is something which is real. Samkhya accepts two really, two principles. One is, two categories. One is Prakriti, another is Purusha. Both are real. Advaita accepts Brahman as well as Maya, but Maya is absolutely not there. It is illusory. It is not there at all. So, but then what happens? The Maya being material, okay, Manas is also material according to Advaita. Now Maya depends on Brahman for its existence. Therefore, the mind also is not independently real. Now, what happens then? What is its size? How, what dimensional it is? Advaita, you know, in Indian philosophical schools, we talk about three dimensions. One is Vibhu, another is Anu, another is Madhyama. Any object has to have three types of the Parimanas. One is, it is all pervasive like ether. Another is Anu like atom. Another is Madhyama. There are objects which are medium sized objects. So the Antahkarana goes under, Antahkarana, the mind is taken as the middle dimensional object, material object. Because it can perceive an Anu as well as the Vibhu. So because it is middle dimensional, it has that elasticity to expand and contract. That is why the mind is taken as Madhyama Parimana. Now, this mind goes with four names in Vedanta as well as other schools. One is Manas, second is Buddhi, third is Chitta, and fourth is Ahamkara. The Manas is that indecisive state of mind, that which is not able to decide. Indecisive state of mind is called as Manas. Buddhi is the decisive state. Ahamkara is the notion of I, and Chitta is the faculty of remembering. Now, since mind is middle dimensional, it is subjected to changes. And please remember, in Advaita Vedanta, I have already told you last class also, these changes are called as vrittis, modifications of the mind. Now, can this antahkarana be considered as an indriya, sense organ? There are views, there are thinkers in Indian philosophy who think that mind is an antahkarana. It is an antahkarana in the sense, it is an internal sense organ, whereas the five other sense organs are external in nature. They cannot know. Suppose you have headache, you cannot see that you have headache. You can only feel that you have headache. Headache is a perception which mind sees. Therefore, mind, for a large number of thinkers in Indian philosophy, in all the schools, is being taken as a sense organ. Okay, the evidence for the existence of mind is being made in different ways in different schools. Advaitins have their own way of proving the existence of the mind. Now, in Katha Upanishad, there is an Upanishad called Katha Upanishad. In that Upanishad, he says that manasaeva anudrashtavyam, by the mind alone, you can perceive this reality. And in elsewhere it is said, indriyebhyah parahyarthaha. The objects are better than the sense organs. Arthebhyascha parang manaha. The mind is superior to the objects of the world. Objects. Manasastu para buddhihi. And the decisive state of mind is better than the indecisive state of mind. And buddhir atma muhan paraha. And the consciousness on which all the knowledge is possible, all the decisions, indecisions, everything is possible, that is still superior to that state. So from Shruti, from on the basis of Shruti, Advaitin tries to prove that there is mind. By means of inference, as Nayaka does, Naya school does, the Naya Vaisheshika says, in the absence of mind, in spite of all other factors, we do not get knowledge. This is enough proof to show that there is mind. There is something called mind. Because if mind is there, perception is there. If mind is not there, perception is not there. Therefore, there have to be something called mind. That means involvement of mind is necessary for any case of perception. Experience is also three. Why I am giving all these three is, even Advaitins try to show that how Shruti is there to prove the presence or existence of the mind. Yukti is there that without mind you cannot perceive. See, suppose you look at, you may look at me, you may look at me, but you may not see me. Because by coming in contact with your sense organ is not perception. Perception is when only sense organ is backed by the mind. Because suppose you are going on the road, many people go, you don't look at everybody. It is simply because you have looked at them, just your glances might have been thrown on them, but you have not seen them because mind has not worked. Okay, so that is the second one. Third is anubhava, experiential way of proving the existence of mind. Now, the mind is directly known and there cannot be any question about its existence. Because sukha, dukkha and all other states of mind cannot be accounted for if you do not take mind as an existent entity. It is directly revealed by the witness self. Therefore, no doubt can be entertained as far as the existence of the mind. In Panchadasi, there is a text called Panchadasi written by a 14th century politician Kam Advaitin called Vidyaranya, who says that there is a pramana vyavastha in the case of the indriyas. The self is the ultimate presupposition for any cognition as it is necessary but not directly involved in the process of cognition. See, the conscious, we have the consciousness as the basis for all cognitions. When you see that seeing is not done something different from you being in, without your being involved in it. Therefore, the self is the ultimate presupposition for any cognition and it is necessary even though it is not directly involved in the process of cognition. It only illumines. It cannot give specific determinant knowledge, but there is the coordination of knowledge of objects and also the knowledge of goodness and badness of objects. When you see an object, you know, you see with some presupposition, you know, whether you like it or not like it. You see, simply perceiving is not there. You see something, you may like it at the first instance. You may not like it. You may be indifferent to it also. There might be no liking or disliking. But how does all that happen if it is simply perception? So, what is the entity that gives this knowledge? The knowledge does not stem from either the self. You know, self is the consciousness per se. It is only, the self is the only consciousness. That does not give you knowledge. Self is simply there. The light does not give you knowledge. It is like light. Nor the sense organs give you knowledge. Because sense organ cannot have liking, disliking. Yeah, even if you accept perception in the case of sense organs, since you see objects with either likingness or dislikingness or indifference, there must be something which is other than these two. What are these two? Self and the sense organ, which is responsible for perception, and that is what is mind. Now, the knowledge does not stem from either self or the sense organs. Hence, mind has to be accepted as the third entity involved in the process of gaining knowledge. I will just quote a simple line from Advaita. Guna dosa anupalabdhi anyatha anupapatya. Whether it is a guna, it is a good thing. Dosa, or it is a defective thing. It cannot be known by any other organ. Tat karanatvena, and in order to know that, in order to perceive such a dimension of the object and its being liked or not liked. Okay, mana eva abhyupagantavyam, you have to accept something called mind. Now see, the self cannot know by itself. It cannot have vishishta jnana by itself. Self, I have told already in the last class, self is consciousness alone. It is the consciousness, it cannot have the conditioned knowledge. Vritti jnana is not possible for the sense, self. The vishishta jnana, anywhere, when you talk about vishishta jnana, it involves three things. Triputi is involved. That is pramata, prameya and pramiti. You need a person who perceives, and you want an object of perception, and you need the pramana. The object being perceived by the perceiver needs the means of knowledge. If there is no means of knowledge accepted, the object cannot be perceived. The object may be there, you may be there. The means of knowledge is not operative, you cannot see the object. So the mind and the sense organs, therefore, cannot give you vishishta jnana by themselves, because they are material by nature. See, the consciousness cannot give you the knowledge because it is not operative in anything else other than itself, like light, you know. There should be other things other than it to be seen. But what happens? That cannot see anything because it is only the consciousness. It is only the illumination, the light, whatever it is. The light, it cannot give you any knowledge. Now, sense organs and mind, can they give you knowledge? They cannot give you knowledge because they are material in nature, whereas knowledge is sentience. When you know something, it becomes the world of, it comes to the world of sentience. So the self gets the knowership because of the sense organs and mind, which function, both of them function as its conditioning factors, limiting agents. Then only the vishishta jnana is possible. Try to understand. As even the case of sun's rays burning a piece of cotton, when they pass through the lens, see, the sun's rays, sunlight, cannot burn a piece of cotton by itself. Okay? Neither the lens by itself can burn the cotton. But you show the lens through the sunlight, it gets a different power, it gets the fire to burn the cotton. Like that, the sun's light is like consciousness, the lens is like mind. So when the consciousness passes through the mind and sense organ, it has the capability to perceive things. An ordinary piece of iron, another example I am giving to make this point clear. An ordinary piece of iron does not burn the finger, but when it is hot, it burns. In the latter case, that even say hot piece of iron, we would not be able to differentiate between iron and fire. In the hot piece of iron, you cannot say fire is there and iron is here. No. They have become one and the same object. The fire and the iron, the fire heat and iron, which pervades it, cannot be distinguished. So also when the antakarana is in close proximity with the self, that the consciousness pervades it completely. See, why iron gets the heat, why not wood? Wood has no capability to get the, you know, wood is not that type of a substance which can get the heat, because it can be burnt. It will not be there if it comes in contact with the fire, but iron can withstand. It can take heat. So that the consciousness pervades the mind completely to such an extent that the jada, the insentient antakarana, like the cool iron becoming hot, the insentient antakarana becomes sentient, looks like sentient. So the jada antakarana, the insentient antakarana, cannot be different from consciousness. This antakarana, this mind, antakarana means mind, is capable of reflecting the consciousness, of being pervaded by it, as even a material mirror can reflect light. The consciousness reflected by antakarana is called as pratibimba or pratibhasa or avhasa or chidabhasa, whatever. As a mirror invariably reflects the object in front, so does the antakarana reflects the self invariably. Vidyaranya calls this reflection as sahaja. It is natural relationship between self and antakarana. If the antakarana is in proximity with the self, it is natural that it will be reflected, it will be luminous, or it will be having the power of the knower. See, there are times when, like when you go to deep sleep, the antakarana is not working. Therefore, you do not know anything. If in your state of waking and dream, antakarana is active and it is in proximity with the self, that witness self, whatever you say, the consciousness which you essentially are, therefore the mind becomes capable of knowledge. The self, therefore in Advaita, the self is called as the bimba, the prototype. You know, the when something is in front of you, there is a mirror in front of you, or your figure or your shape will be reflected in that. Similarly, because the mind is a luminous object, therefore the self gets reflected in it. Now, what is the relationship between chit and upadhi? There is a false identification between the two according to Advaita Vedanta. The identity between two entities is, see, if you say A is B, A cannot be fully B. B is B, A is B, A is A. What is the identity? Suppose I say Mukha Chandra. How do you understand the Sabda Bodha of Mukha Chandra? The moon is not like a face. Moon is not a face. Not a face is like the moon. You see? How do you understand Chandra Mukha? The moon-faced person. Okay, moon face. What is the understanding? The understanding is certain qualities of the moon are present in the face, or certain qualities of the face are present in the moon. We can say. That means it is not total identity. See, it does not become A is not A. It is A is B. Therefore, Advaita takes a very strong standpoint saying that there is, whenever there is an identification, it is false. It is because the very concept of two-ness is based on the fact that there is difference between objects. This false relation in Advaita is called as Tadatmya. For Advaitin, there cannot be change in the essential nature of a thing. If there is a change, the object is no more there. As a result of this Tadatmya, there is a climb down. See, what happens? You identify yourself with something else, then act accordingly. See, the what happens, mind identifies itself, becomes one with the consciousness, then starts working. So what happens? There is a tadatmya. This is called as anyonya dhyasa. You cannot bring out one from the other. The mind cannot be separated from the consciousness, still be understood. There will be no, the mind is not there at all. Because mind can only be perceived as mind if at all it is in proximity with the consciousness. So, as a result of this tadatmya, as I have told you, two examples I gave, like a red hot iron ball and the lens through which the sunlight passes to become the fire. Okay, there is no fire in the sunlight. Sunlight does not burn, nor the lens burns. But when the sunlight passes through the lens alone burns. Similarly, the consciousness does not know because it is only consciousness. It has no mechanism of knowing. It has no limbs of knowledge. Similarly, the mind does not know. It has limbs of knowledge, but it has no knowledge at all. It is only limbs. See, a knife cannot hurt another man unless it is propelled by a person. Okay? So, as a result of this tadatmya, there is a climb down or fall as it were in the case of consciousness. Because of this, the consciousness, which is one and relationless, non-relational, seems to have been limited and gets related to the antakarana. See, by itself the consciousness has nothing to be related because the only padartha according to Advaita Vedanta. This is the only object. Brahman being the only object, there is nothing else other than that to which it can be related. So the chit and antakarana blended together like heat and iron plate, and this is a complex entity. The chit and antakarana become together, the blend is like that hot ball iron. So this is a complex entity which gives you the basic mechanism for perception. The self gets itself individuated, you know. Self is not individual. Self, say, what is individual? Who am I? I am because of my mind, what my mind is. What is the mind? Mind is because it is on the self. I know myself. Or I as an individual is because of the individualization of the self. The self gets itself individualized or individuated as a result of its relation with the antakarana, the mind. Unless it has relation with the mind, it will have no individuality at all. Out of this tadatmya, this identity, the self, the I, the ego emerges. The very concept of I is the first thing that comes out of this marriage between self and mind. The self-mind contact gives you the first thing. Self is what? Witness. Mind is what? Which is witnessed. And word, what is that is the first factor of witness? It is I. The I ego. It has to be kept in mind that there cannot be any relationship between chit and antakarana. The consciousness and mind cannot be related at all, since both are totally opposed in nature. The consciousness by itself is not the ego. The consciousness is not the ego. It is not the individual self. Nor the antakarana can claim I. Antakarana can never become I sense. I sense cannot come to antakarana by itself because the antakarana is a material substance. So, ego emergence as a result of consciousness internal organ blend. When the internal organ, that is mind, comes in contact with the consciousness, then only the ego emerges. Unless there is a fall in the consciousness, the ego cannot arise because consciousness does not need all these things. Therefore, the first factor that which comes in contact with the consciousness is the mind, and that creates the ego. So it is a state which it is not, in the sense at no point of time the consciousness became I also, because it is as I told you, it is an illusory blend. It is a illusory association. It is not a right. It is not like Purusha and Prakriti association. It is not the evolutes are prakriti are related to each other, not like that. Since it is created by Maya, therefore it emerges out of this blend which is illusory. Unless there is a fall in the case of consciousness, fall means climb down. You know, by itself it need not know anything, but it knows. It knows when it knows, it's what happened? It came in contact with certain adjuncts. Okay, adjuncts means limitations, conditioning factors, like what? The mind. You have many conditioning factors. You say that I am a sinister, or you say that I am a professor. All these are conditioning factors. Though I, pristine I, becomes what? Mired with the dart. You know, if you use the yogic language, because of these identifications. So to conclude this part of the discussion, the consciousness by itself is not the knower, nor can antahkarana be the knower. As a result of the blend, the ego arises, and that is the knower. That is the knower, which is called as pramata or the jnata. The antahkarana, which carries the reflection of consciousness, is called pramata. The relation of identity between consciousness and the mind is called as natural relation. See, since it is there, therefore it is natural. It is not propelled by somebody. When we can never know when consciousness became associated with antahkarana. See, the question can be asked, which day the consciousness came in contact with antahkarana? You can say always that day John met Sari. This is not possible in case of antahkarana and mind, because for Advaita, the both are beginningless. Two beginningless entities cannot be associated in the historical time. Okay? As I was telling you the other day, you can always ask from which day you came to know John. But you cannot ask a question from which day you do not know John. So, but there is an end to it, because this blend, this association can come to an end in liberation. I was talking the other day, it is like Pragabhava. It is anadi, but it can come to an end. Anadi shantaha Pragabhava, that is what Naya school says. It has no beginning, but it can come to an end. Like the association of mind with the consciousness has no beginning, but the mind can be dissociated from consciousness at the state of liberation. Now, the second is, the sense organs are only upadhis. They are adjuncts, limiting adjuncts. In the second state, there is identification with the sense organs. In the first state, the notion of I arises. You know, I have already told you, when the mind comes in contact with the consciousness, what emerges is I, the sense of I. Now, from that, in the second state, it identifies itself with the sense organs. And what comes into being is the I am blind, I am deaf. Now, you associate yourself with your mind only. Second state, that is the I, comes into being. Second state, you associate with yourself with the sense organs. You say that I am blind, I am deaf, all sense organs and motor organs, I am lame, all that. Now, what happens? The second, the concept of my arises in the form my ears, my eyes, which manifests in the statement like I am blind and I am deaf. In the third state, there is identification with the body, which is expressed in the form, I am fat, I am fair, I am male, etc. Vidyaranya calls this identification as karmajam. See, this is the theory of evil which Vidyaranya tries to work on. That why a man is rich, why another man is not rich. Why a man is blind and why another man is not blind. You can read that Paul Dusson's book on Upanishads, where he talks that even in India, the Christians and Muslims also believe in karma, theory of karma, even though Christianity and Islam doesn't believe in that. So, Vidyaranya says that it is because of the karma one gets good indriyas or bad indriyas. Okay. So, Because the type of sense organ and body that one enjoys are because of the past karma. In the fourth state, there is identification with the external objects. Right from wife to one's country. You say that, you know, people, soldiers go to fight for what? They say that they belong to that country. See, as, get my point, I belong to myself as a professor. I am fat, the fatness is mine. This mind extends from mind to the sense organ and to the objects of the world. Like you own your wife. Wife is not you. There are many cases. Wife is not related to you through the inherent relation. It is only a sanjog relation. Any day you can divorce. But it happens. The identification goes to the external objects. Right from the country to the anything that you possess, including the dog of your girlfriend also. See, anything. It extends to the things that you know. So this identification is not that strong. See, as you go beyond from the mind, the I is so important. Okay. Therefore, in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, it is said, Atmanastu Kamaya Sarvam Priyam Bhavati. It is because of yourself. You don't like your son because of your son. You like your son because of you. You don't like your wife because of wife. You like your wife because of you. So everything for me, I like. And what Advaitin try to say is, you try to see that me also, it is also another extension on what? On that consciousness. So the consciousness is there, the me came into being. There are times when there is no me, like deep sleep state. So this identification is not that strong, because as we go outer and outer, the identification becomes thinner and thinner. One day you drop things. Suppose, you know, one person does not have an eye, he does not die, right? So that means he does not de-identify himself from himself. Once there is identification, there is empirical life. Strictly speaking, in Advaita, there is only consciousness which alone is exists. But various states of things are spoken about, and this is the case of error. All, you know, everything that you talk excepting consciousness, not talk. Talking itself is a bhranti janya. Okay? So, if in the self there is no trace of duality, it is attributeless, without characteristics, but because of its association with antakarana, it looks as though it has qualities. There is false identity with the body, that is abhimana, you know. You always think yourself to be something and work. And then one owns up the qualities of the body, the qualities of the sense organs, and the qualities of the physical world also you own. The one plays a role without the awareness that he is playing a role. See, if you do things, there is nothing wrong in owning, but if you do not know that those are not you, there is nothing wrong in marrying or having being a soldier or owning a country. But you too much identify yourself, and this role identification leads to empirical problems. The third world, first world, second world, fourth world, all this because of this identification only. The earth does not understand that there are so many worlds in me. The who has put, because of our identifying with a particular place, what do you do? Put a border, China wall, German wall. So this role identification is born out of, Advaitin says, the basic identification between consciousness and mind. The role identification is a problem. It is not a social problem. It is not a personal problem. It is a social problem. I am a professor as long as I am the university. The day I go, I am no more a professor. See, suppose it happens that I forget all that I know. I am not a professor. It is a state of mind. So but what I do, I too much identify with myself and create a problem for me and others. So the hence, the bondage is, according to Advaita, the bondage is the association with gross and subtle bodies. Liberation is the termination of this association. Bondage is the fall of the original condition which accounts for the jivatma, and liberation is the regaining such a state. In short, The Advaita, for Advaita, presence of a subtle body or a gross body is not a problem. You can be there, but identifying with that is a problem. And that has become, that comes because of what? Wrong identification. Now from this another 5 minutes I will talk about erroneous perception, what Advaita means by that. Since the identification of the soul with the jiva is due to mistaken understanding, identity, it is worth discussing what is the erroneous perception and how does it occur. It has been already stated that every cognition has a cognitum, the object of cognition. Whether it is veridical or illusory, there is no contentless cognition. So, assuming that there is a negative entity, the cognition through anupalabdhi in the form of knowing the absence of something, say pot, has to be accepted. The absence of, the knowledge of the absence of pot is because of the what? Non-perception of the pot. There is a non-perception. In other words, the absence of ghatabhava is the cognitum for non-perception. I may be a little complicated. Suppose I don't see something here, what it means is, the object is not here. That means what I see? I see the absence of the object. Okay? So, in Advaita, for anything, any perception, whether it is existent or non-existent, you need a object. Object can be negative or positive. So, we use the word khyati in Sanskrit for erroneous perception, though the khyati, the word means perception, good perception. Cognition. Khyate, jnayate, iti khyati means jnanam. The traditionally, in Vedantic systems and other systems, they use this as perceptual error. There are 5 types of errors, perceptual errors, that are accepted in Indian philosophy. Those are atmakhyati. The atmakhyati is accepted by Vijnanavada school of Buddhism. Then asatkhyati. Asatkhyati is accepted by Madhyamika school of Buddhism. Atmakhyati, asatkhyati, akhyati is accepted by Prabhakara school of Buddhism. Mimamsa, not Buddhism. Prabhakara school of Mimamsa. Asatkhyati, atmakhyati, asatkhyati, akhyati, anyatakhyati is accepted by Naikas. And Advaitin accepts anirvachaniya khyati. I have given all that in the paper that I have distributed. Now, let us go to what is that asatkhyati. Asatkhyati is being spoken of by Madhyamika Buddhist. Asatkhyati is that, see, the problem here is whether the object of perceptual error exists or does not exist. When you see a rope as a snake, whether that snake exists there or does not exist there. What amount of snake exists there? Vishishta Advaitins say that snake exists. And what about dream objects? Vishishta Advaitin say the dream objects are true. This is not accepted to other schools, and more so to the Madhyamika school of Nagarjuna, who says, why you talk about asad khyati? When you talk about Prama also, we say the objects are not there, sunyavada. When I see a rope as a snake, there is no question of saying whether snake is available or not. I say rope is not there. You see, that is what Nagarjuna says. Anything comes out of the non-existence of the object. So, according to them, Madhyamika school says, everything is non-existent, and so the cognition is always about something which is non-existent. Snake is in front is non-existent, and what to talk of rope, snake? Snake is not there, rope is not there, rope, snake, question does not arise. Criticizing this view, Advaitin say that we cannot perceive something which is non-existent. A non-existent entity cannot be perceived at all. Now, the simple rule is that if something is to be perceived, it cannot be non-existent. For him too, the pragmatic possibility of reality, see, they say that arthakriyakaritva sattva, isn't it? If arthakriyakaritva, pragmatic possibility has to be accepted, the object has to be existent. A non-existent object cannot have arthakriya karitva, pragmatic possibility. You cannot play with a non-football. So, secondly, what is cognized alone can be negated. See, negation, now what happens? You say this is a snake, and later on you say this is not a snake. Now, suppose I say what this is not a snake. Now, what is that I am negating? If the snake is not there, the negation does not arise. The question of negation does not arise. So, what is cognized alone can be negated. If you say that rose is red, you can say the rose is not red. Every negation presupposes an affirmation. So, they say prasaktasyaiva pratishedaha. You can say he is there, he is not there. Suppose first I say he is not there, then the question of he is being there or all, the dialogue does not come at all. So, madhyamika cannot account for perception, either perception or sublation. So, the question doesn't, they are asat khyati vadins. The second is atma khyati vadins. Atma khyati vadins are Vijnanavada school of Buddhism. And Vijnanavadins say that everything is product of mind. There is nothing called objective. You are there, you are a product of my mind, it is you are subjective. That is, Vijnanavada school says that there is only cognition. Cognition is the only reality. And they talk about the santana series of cognition. There is no external object besides cognition. Only cognition accounts for everything. The subjective cognition appears as the object outside, and they believe that this subjective state accounts for all the types of knowledge. Now, criticizing this view, Advaitins say that epistemologically you have to take things as real. You cannot create things in mind. Suppose I say that this is pot and this is a pan, that is table. The three things are predicated or qualified to this. If the things are not outside, they are all in my mind, then they could have become, this is elephant, that is tree, this is snake. See, anything can become anything. So, if mind produces, how there is order in production in the sense, in the understanding. You know, they say that you think that there is understanding itself is a mind. That is their answer. Vijnanavada school says, but it is not so. Because if you don't think that things are outside, then the cognition will not be in keeping with the object that which you are seeing. If such a thing does not arise, then what will be negated? Your mind, subject will be negated, isn't it? This will be negated. This is a snake. What is negated? This is not a snake. What happens? First is qualified as a snake. The cognition is qualified as a snake. Second, cognition is negated from the qualification of snake. Suppose both happens in your mind, then what is happening? That this is alone gets affected. This is a snake, this component gets affected, which is not how it is. It is only the predicate part which gets affected in the erroneous cognition, and hence that theory cannot be accepted. I will skip all the other theories. Anyatha khyati is being propounded by Noyayikas. They say, when you see something here, you don't see a thing here. Suppose you see a sail as a silver. You don't see the silver there. You see that silver from the shop. Your mind goes back to the shop silver and you see the silver shop here. It is not the case. If you see the silver in sail silver, if you happen to see the silver from the shop here, then if you say it is not a sail, say it is not a silver, what would happen? The silver from shop also should go. Isn't it? Suppose you say that this is a silver, this is a piece of silver, and this silver is what? The silver from the shop. They say that it is existent. Where? In the shop. Suppose it is not a silver. What happens? The shop silver must go. That does not happen. Therefore, that is also not accepted. Advaitin therefore says, there are few things that accounts for all the cases of error, that is defect in the pramana. Suppose you have the wrong way, you have jaundice, pramana. Your visual sense is not working, right? You will see a white conch as a yellow conch. The pramana dosha, they say pramana dosha will bring out error. Like a white thing looks yellow because of because of jaundice. Then prameya dosa. Prameya means the object is defective. Like, suppose you keep something right in front of, very close to your eye, you cannot see in that. Or suppose it is 1,000 kilometers away, it looks small, like stars. Stars look small because, not because stars are small. Because the prameya is so far away from you, you see that as small. That is what Advaitin says. And defect in pramata. Suppose a man suffers from some psychological problem. Suppose a lady's son is killed because of snake bite. He will see all the ropes as snakes. She will see. Because the psychological state is like that. Anxiety. You know, all these things will account for the defect or erroneous perception, Advaitin says. And the three. Pramana dosha, first. Prameya dosha and pramatra dosha. The fourth is, there must be the knowledge of the object in a general way. See, nobody sees. Suppose you come from a country where there is no snake, you will not see a rope as a snake. You should have knowledge of the snake earlier. Then, the ignorance about the nature of the object, that also creates illusion. That, when you see the rope, you did not see it properly. The special quality of the rope is not seen. Now, the sixth, the vastu anubhava janya samskara, the impression born out of the prior existence of the object. You see, there must be samskara. Suppose you have forgotten what snake is, you cannot see a rope as a snake. You have to remember it. And seventh, most important, there must be ignorance to support. In any case of erroneous cognition, there must be ignorance. Identification, I told you, is only because of ignorance. And what are the implications? Yes, we'll meet. So, implications of avidya maya. The first implication is, there can be no error in the absence of substratum. Any error will, if there is no rope, snake will not be visible. And there must be presence of avidya. And the role of substratum and avidya. See, the locus, the adhikarana, that is, the without a locus you cannot see either a thing or absence of a thing, or a wrong perception. And what is the ultimate gist, crux of all this discussion? Advaitin says that the rope snake is mithya. It is neither true nor false. And it is something which is anirvachanya, indeterminable. Why he says like that is because Advaitin says that if something is there, it would be there, it will not go. If snake is true, it will be true for all the times. It is not true because it is getting sublated. If it is true, it will not be sublated. Satchetna badheta. Asatchet, if it is not true, it will not be available for perception. But it is available for perception. You know, asachyat, if it is a square circle, you cannot see. You are seeing it. Therefore, it is neither sat nor asat. This is being contrasted by all other schools in the post-Shankara period. That we shall see later how they have questioned this sadasad vilakshanatva, that the world or the maya is something which is a category which is neither sat, neither existent nor non-existent. We shall do it in next class. Any question you have? Yeah. Pardon me? No, that will come when we are going to metaphysics. That what does the bliss dimension of the self do? How is the self bliss, right? That Atma is Ananda, no? Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, Anandam Brahma. He is asking the self is bliss. Can we say self as bliss? There are a lot of dialogue in this, in Indian philosophy also, whether we can say self as bliss or not. We can accept satyam jnanam anantam, but ananda, therefore, even Upanishads, we have an ananda adhikarana. You know, Brahma Sutra also deals very importantly with this concept, whether we can say the self as bliss, because Buddha takes an opposite, totally opposite view, that the self is full of misery, everything is suffering. But Indian, that's not Indian. Buddha is also an Indian. So the orthodox school say that self is in the form of bliss. It is whatever bliss you see outside, it is only the manifestation of that total bliss that which you have, not you have, which you are. Anything else want to add? Which India?
Indriya.
Oh, Indriya.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So I was just wondering, because Indriya is material.
Indriya is material.
And I guess we cannot perceive our own senses.
I said Indriya is not a gross material object. That is what I said.
Oh, okay.
It is a subtle, sukshmadravya. Because, see, therefore, because of that, it operates only in its region. See, the sense of sight only can see the world of color and form, isn't it? The sense of hearing can only perceive the world of sound. It cannot see things. It is because it is a drabhya, therefore it operates in only its own world of only its own sphere. That is what I said. And the mind is also being taken by Advaitin as a sukshma drabhya only. It is a madhyama parimana drabhya.
So because indriya is subtle, we cannot proceed as object.
Indriya is atindriya. Correct. That's what you are asking. Indriya cannot be perceived. Through indriya only you perceive things.
Well, I'm not sure. My question is that is it possible that I perceive your indriya? No, is it?
You cannot perceive either your indriya or my indriya.
Okay.
Indriya is it is imperceptible.
Okay.
It is not indriyasya atindriyatvam. That is what all the schools also agree with this. Indriya cannot be perceived because only gross objects can be perceived. Formed objects can be perceived. It is sukshma drabhya. Therefore, it cannot be perceived. Alexandra, you want to ask anything?
No?
Tanikramanji, you want to ask anything? No?